Good morning. Welcome to the press briefing here at the UN in Geneva. Today is Tuesday, 30th of September. We have two invitees who will brief us on the situation in Afghanistan 1 month after the terrible earthquake that has hit this region, the eastern region of Afghanistan. Unfortunately, we have some issues with the connection. So I will start with the announcements, and in the meantime, we will try to retrieve the connection with our colleagues in Kabul. So let me give the floor to Thomas Kroll-Knight for UNECE. Thomas, you have the UN Forum of Mayors coming up, and maybe another meeting. Just let you present it.
That's right. Thank you, Alessandra. So a big week on urban issues next week here in Geneva, as the fifth Forum of Mayors will gather over 50 city leaders from around the world here in the Palais, and that will come back to back with a ministerial meeting on housing affordability and sustainability. So that will take part in the framework of our committee on sustainable urban development, housing and land management. So that's starting next Monday on the 6th and goes up until the 10th. The Forum of Mayors, let me give you a little bit of background on that for those who didn't attend last forums. So under this year's theme, the Cities Sharing the Future, the forum will help to reinforce the crucial role of cities and other local actors for sustainable development and addressing key issues. Now, this is a unique platform within the UN system which links local and national authorities within a normative intergovernmental framework. So this is part of the idea of realizing a more inclusive, networked, multilateral system. So the Forum of Mayors will negotiate outcomes that will then be submitted to the ministerial level, to our committee work. So this is linking those two levels in an innovative way. Now, this forum will be chaired by the city of Glasgow, the mayor of Glasgow, with vice chairpersons from Slovenia, from Novo Mesto, Slovenia, Heidelberg, Germany, and the deputy mayor of Geneva here in Switzerland, our host city. Keynote addresses from the mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, and Ruth Dreyfus, former president of Switzerland and the spokesperson of this forum. So city leaders from across Europe will be joined by city leaders from Latin America, Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. So I will share again the list of those participating with you by email. So the ministerial meeting on housing affordability and sustainability, this is starting on the 8th of October, will gather around 30 ministers and high-level government representatives from UNECE member states, to be chaired by Switzerland's State Secretary for Housing. And the focus is on affordable housing, so a major challenge right across Europe, right across the region, which is not affecting only the poorest of the populations, but large swathes. We had a study last year, just to put this in context, that over one-third of those in the bottom 40% of income distribution are experiencing housing stress, with housing costs regularly exceeding 45% of income, of household income. So this is a highly political issue, and the holding of this ministerial meeting is testament to the increasing political prioritization of these issues. So ministers will negotiate and be invited to agree on commitments for sustainable and affordable housing. Again, I will share these with you for your perusal before. As always, we remain available to facilitate your contact with cities, with ministers. I will share the list of them with you, and we will do our best to put you in contact. Those are taking place in Tempest next week, and we will have a dedicated press conference here on the 8th of October, 9 a.m., so next Wednesday, with the State Secretary of Switzerland, of Croatia, of the Forum of Mayors Chair, and our Executive Secretary. I will just touch briefly on two more points. So I sent you yesterday details of the Sustainable Energy Week events that's taking place this week, including a couple of sessions with a human rights focus. A big topic for us is the just transition and resilient energy systems. So that's the focus. Please have a look at those, and if you're interested, we'll do our best to facilitate contact again. And finally, just the good news that Sierra Leone has joined the UN Water Convention, as shared yesterday. that Sierra Leone now joins a growing group of West African nations to have joined the convention: Côte d'Ivoire, Gambia, Ghana, Guinea-Bissau, Nigeria, Senegal, Togo. So there are now 13 parties from Africa, where 90% of fresh water is in shared basins. So water cooperation to strengthen the foundations for peace, security, climate change adaptation, and sustainable development. That's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Thomas, for this briefing. I don't know if there are any questions from the room or online. I see Jamie has his hand up, but I'm not sure it's for you or because he was there before. Jamie, is that a question for Thomas?
No, it's not. It's hi, Thomas. Thank you for your presentation. But my question is for Jens. I hope he can answer my question.
Look, if there are no other questions for Thomas, I will let him go because we see now a connection from an address, UNAMA. So I'm hoping that
it'd be great
they
to get
are.
Now.
I'm hoping that we have managed to contact Kabul. I'm looking at my colleagues. So Thomas, thank you very much. Thanks for this briefing. Let me see if we still have UNAMA online. And I'm not seeing them anymore. Today the connection is hard. I'm looking, no, we don't. Okay, so maybe I'll give the floor to Jamie. It would be,
Jamie,
go ahead. Jens is listening.
Thank you. And maybe you could also address this question as well. As you surely heard yesterday, there was an announcement in Washington from President Trump about a peace plan for Gaza that is has seemingly been agreed to by Bibi Netanyahu. Point eight of that 20-point plan refers to the entry of distribution of aid into Gaza that will proceed without interference from the two parties through the United Nations and its agencies. So could you give us some details, please, about how the UN will be involved in this? And was the UN aware of this beforehand? And is it on board? And I have a follow-up after that.
Yeah, okay. So let me first start by saying that we are aware of the plan that you are referring to. Of course, we are also continuing to be in touch with the parties, with the various parties about the peace efforts. For indeed, we welcome all the mediation efforts, and of course, we stand ready to support peace plan with everything we can do, including the provision of humanitarian assistance. And maybe Jens has a little bit more on that.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. And thank you, Jamie. There's not much I can add. As you know, the UN is not part of drafting this proposal, which remains a proposal. So on the content, on what's in it, I don't know. What I can say for sure is that the United Nations and its humanitarian agencies, of course, as we have done since day one, stand ready and prepared and capable to increase aid deliveries inside Gaza whenever the opportunity is such that we are allowed to do so and the safety and security of doing so is there.
Indeed. Thank you. Jamie.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to follow up. Jens, if you could update us on the backlog of trucks and various aid that is still waiting, that is currently waiting to get into Gaza, whether through Rafah or Kerem Shalom or other places, if you have that. And I'd also like you to just take up the second part of the statement, which says that the point eight, I should say, opening the Rafah crossing in both directions will be subject to the same mechanism implemented under the January 19th, 2025 agreement. Could you please give us a refresher? January 19th, to many of us, seems like a really long time ago. Can you give us exactly the details of that, what that meant, and how quickly the UN can be mobilized to get aid in if this plan does actually get accepted and implemented?
Yeah, thank you. On the volume of aid ready to go in, I think we have briefed and heard from many agencies that aid is ready and available to move in from various agencies and have been so for a long time. We have made a point of this, that it is stockpiled and available in the region to get in, and that it has been, of course, paid for by the donors who will expect us to deliver that aid to people in need. The you mentioned a date, I think on the 19th of January. That was the first day of the ceasefire when we resumed deliveries at a much larger scale than we had been able to prior to that. And we continue to do that for the duration of that ceasefire. We did have a statement out, and you can look it up. I can also send it to you by Tom Fletcher on the 19th, which gives you a reaction to what we said at that point in time. And I think that's the best I can give you at this moment.
Jamie, follow-up to the follow-up?
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you, and I appreciate your forbearance to you and everyone for my questions. Just one third little point, also referring to point eight. It also says that other international institutions that are not associated in any manner with either party will be involved in the aid distributions. As I understand it, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is still active, and we and other in the area, and I have reported, and we have reported, and others have reported that it does have ties to the Israeli government. So is it your understanding that this that the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation would be would not be involved in the aid distributions if this plan is enacted? And just last question about this. What is the United Nations doing to try to get more information from the Trump administration, from the Israelis, about what the UN role would be in this? Are you communicating with them now actively? Thank you.
Yeah, the issue, as I said, Jimmy, is this plan, as you said yourself, it's quite recent, and we are in touch with various parts that should contribute to the peace efforts. On the issue of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, I think you should ask those who have drawn the plan. But we are absolutely ready to contribute, to support, and to provide every help that we can, including humanitarian assistance, as Jens confirmed. Ravi Kant.
Yeah, thank you. Same issue which Jamie has raised, namely, it's not clear that you will be involved at all or not. Suppose if the new peace body which is being set up doesn't involve the UN, what could the UN do then?
Yeah, just briefly, from the UN humanitarian side, we will do whatever, what we always do, try to deliver aid to the people who desperately need it, and we have the structures available to do so and the aid to push through those structures.
Thank you very much. Christian, Emma, I know you're all asking questions on Gaza. The problem is that we have managed to get our colleagues from UNAMA, as you can see on the screen. So if you, I would ask for your indulgence. Jens will not go away, neither will I. And if you don't mind, let's go now to Kabul and listen from our colleagues, because the connection is not very steady. And then I promise I will give you the floor to ask for more questions on Gaza. So I'd like to welcome our colleagues that you have already seen and met from Kabul, Indrika Ratwate, the humanitarian coordinator in Afghanistan, and Arafat Jamal, the UNHCR Afghanistan representative. They're both connecting from Kabul. As I said, welcome. I know the connection is not perfect. Let's hope it will work. I'll give you the floor for an update on the situation a month after the earthquake. I think maybe, Indrika, you want to start?
Yes, thank you very much. I think, as you said, 1 month on after this horrific earthquake, which killed some 2,000 people, injuring about 3,600 and damaging 8,500 homes, the humanitarian community has really stepped up in the last 4 weeks in its response. And in coordination with the authorities and with our partners, delivered to a very, very remote part of Afghanistan. I myself was up in Kunar province together with the representative of UNHCR, UNFPA, WHO, and our NGO umbrella lead to look at this response. And up in these areas, we see a huge effort being made by partners and the UN, our male colleagues, our female colleagues, delivering on the ground. As I mentioned last time, the topographical challenges are such that many of the families in the more remote villages are coming down to the valleys, and we have a phenomenon of informal settlements coming up in the village we went to called Andala Chak in Chauke district in Kunar province. There was about 3,000 families, to give you an idea, around the cluster of villages. And the villages themselves, pre-earthquake, had only about 1,000 of individuals. But now we have 3,000 families in that valley that are being supported. So the immediate challenges are really looking at winterization. The winter is not anymore on the way. It's upon us. Seriously trying to make the shelters winterized, winter clothing for the individuals. Heating solutions remain a top priority. At the same time, these are very congested settlements, given the topographical challenges and the space available in and around the villages, because there are cultivable lands with crops on it, so people can't just extend themselves. They are congested, so the wash facilities, water sanitation really has to be increased. And then supporting also very much the ongoing, the food, the health, the nutrition, the psychosocial support to the affected populations. For example, I had a, together with our colleagues, a meeting with the shura of the male population and the women, and we're talking to one woman, she had lost 11 members of her family. And really the trauma is quite immense. And I must say, I was gratified that in my interactions with the local authorities there and in Kunar, where I underscored the importance of our female colleagues, UN partner colleagues, being able to reach, deliver for the affected populations and the women, there was a consensus that this space is essential from a protection and delivery perspective, and that this has to be maintained. There are challenges, obviously, in the overarching space for our female colleagues to deliver, as you well know, but we were really making and underscoring the point to the authorities that this remains quintessential for effective response here. I think where we stand right now, 1 month on, is really, while continuing the critical humanitarian response, is to now have a quick, what we call a joint recovery assessment, which looks at how we can target the limited resources at our disposal to also helping with some of the key rehabilitation elements. The shelter component, which all the families told us, which is extremely important for them to go back. The connectivity, where some of the roads have collapsed, so they can't go back. And it's difficult for us to also take the non-food items and other shelter repair elements up to their villages. And last but not least, I think a very important part here is also maintaining the food, health, and education support to these families as we speak. I want to thank the initial response from the international community to our earthquake response plan. Around $23.7 million have been contributed so far of the $140 million ask. But really, again, a shout out to those who supported, but requesting urgent support because we need to step up the winterization and the wash, as we said. Food has been delivered to over 150,000 individuals, a lot of wash facilities, and right now We looked at the distribution, collective joint up approaches at the hub there, with all the agencies coming together, that beneficiaries can come and collect these assistance moving forward. This remains, I think, as I said before, a crisis within a crisis. We have had so far, as of yesterday, almost 2.2 million Afghan refugees and undocumented individuals returning to Afghanistan, and they continue. And Rafa Jamal, the UNHCR rep, is also has been out in the field looking at that as well, together with our colleagues at IOM. And this continues apace. So we have that challenge, while at the same time we are facing a drought in other parts of the country. So multiple shocks are really impacting us. And lastly, to another point before I just also open up for Q&A, as of yesterday, 1700 hours, we were informed that the telecommunications and fiber optic connectivity in Afghanistan is going to be suspended until further notice. What you are seeing right now is a satellite link we have here, but the rest of the country is completely cut off right now, by and large, and affecting not just the UN and partners in critical humanitarian assistance delivered to people, but health programs, banking services, financial services, and including also connectivity. Flights are not landing in the country, so we pretty much have a very dire situation with connectivity right now. And we do hope, we are in discussions with the government to seek a waiver for critical connectivity for us, but it remains quite dire. So hence also the very patchy connectivity we have. And by the way, as this call has required me to shut down everything else in the office here to be able to have a connection with you. So let me stop there and also ask Arafat if you want to add something from your side.
Thank you, Indrika. Simply to underline that this trip to the tragic site in Underlachak was also an example of the UN doing what it does best. In other words, coming together as different agencies under the leadership of the humanitarian coordinator. This mission included, in addition to UNHCR, we had the World Health Organization and UNFPA, just a sampling of the large number of agencies that are responding. I think it really did show that we can come together for a joined up response in emergencies. While we were there, we observed, we saw, we listened to the needs, and we also took the time to listen and to condole with the people who've suffered this huge tragedy. I would also just underscore, as Indrika mentioned, that a large number of these people, even in a very remote area, are those who have been doubly hurt. They have been deported from their places of asylum, and then they have suffered an earthquake. So Afghan is always layers upon layers of crisis. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both for this update, and thanks for, I mean, that we understand the technical situation is terrible, but thanks for being there and briefing us. I see a question from AFP, Robin.
Thank you. On the Taliban's decision to cut the internet and mobile phone signal, could you say a little bit more about what the fallout of this decision is going to be on people's daily lives in Afghanistan? What is the impact that it's going to have? I presume it's going to shut down a lot of commerce, for example. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. I think...
Just go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Robin. As I was saying, I mean, at a top line impact is that connectivity is gone. So mobile phones, data, connectivity. For example, our colleagues out in the deep fields who are front facing, delivering, we don't have connectivity with them. At a community level, I would imagine that for normal business transactions, for banking, for cash transfers, for remittances that come from abroad, which are critical for these communities, that's been cut off. Internal communication amongst partners, agencies, banks, institutions has been cut off. Even for the de facto authorities and line ministries, communication has been completely cut off. We have been trying to reach out with the relevant authorities, and even they are having challenges in communicating between themselves. The fallout also in terms of impact on lives is critical medical services, critical supply chains, and critical vaccinations and assistance that keep the basic essential services functioning in the country is going to be impacted. And last but not least, I think the connectivity with the rest of the world. The flights have been canceled. International flights are not coming in today. And I would imagine transit trade, goods and services across borders, all of that, including, I would imagine, even if there's connectivity linked to passport control in some of these borders, is going to be impacted. So it is really, as I was saying, this is another crisis on top of the existing crisis, utterly unnecessary in that sense for this kind of interruption to take place. And the impact is going to be on the lives of Afghan people.
Thank you very much. Emma, Reuters.
Good morning. Just to follow up on my colleague Robin's question. So firstly, have they explained to you at all why they've taken this step and how long it will last for? And then secondly, so if you can't get this waiver, how will that concretely affect your aid work in the next week or the next month?
Thank you, Anna. Yes, we are obviously negotiating and trying to get this waiver, but also talking about it beyond the UN partners and humanitarian work. Its impact on the whole country is also what we are trying to reiterate. As far as we know, we don't have any details right now that this was tested out in some areas in the last week or 10 days. In some provinces, there was some disruptions. And we believe there was discussions happening in Kandahar with the authorities around this, but we have not been given a reasoning for as to why this disruption is taking place. From our side, we've had an emergency, what we call a crisis management meeting, to look at essential business connectivity and continuity. We've reduced this national staff and others coming to the offices because we just can't communicate. And we have gone into what we call essential business continuity, limiting our communications, using other channels like VHF and radios to communicate, and bringing it down to essential life-saving work that we can support with the comms capacity we have. And that, I must reiterate, with the comms capacity we have, because in the remote areas, VHF is only the ability to communicate. There has been some patchy on and off mobile connectivity with some service providers. The fiber optics, we are told, is maybe replaced by other systems, but we do not have any visibility. But we have gone into essential service and essential business business continuity mode from our side.
Thank you very much. If there are no other question in the room, I'll go to the platform. Isabel Zacco, the Spanish News Agency.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much. It's very difficult to imagine how this is happening nowadays. News are describing a complete cut of internet and telecommunications. And firstly, is possible to maybe use telephone communications, because I understand that data internet is not possible, but can you use telephones? Also, this situation was more or less announced a few weeks ago, because the authorities cut the optic fiber in the north of the country. So did you have any preparation for the situation? Could you put in place any system? And also, do you know how long it will last, the situation? Because also they have, the authorities have said that they will create an alternative system inside the country for the essential needs. Do you know something about this and when this will be functioning? Thank you.
Thank you, Isabel. We have been informally told through our sources, the telecoms authority, this might be short-lived, but we haven't been officially told anything. So that's just on how long this would be. Yes, indeed, as you said, when we saw the disruptions in some of the provinces, we have looked at what we call VSAT connections, which we have through satellite in some of our offices, including in the field. We have gone to service providers to increase that bandwidth. This is a very expensive connectivity, so we stand by. We have a very low bandwidth, but in the last week or so, many of our partners and our agencies have increased. And as of last evening, we are in active discussions with some of the service providers to increase that bandwidth even more, so hence our ability to communicate right now. But this call, for example, requires everything else to shut down because it takes video connectivity. I am told, and forgive my ignorance, I'm not an expert on the IT side, but they're looking at another system with point-to-point and what they call a different system they're trying to establish in here. But we don't have any visibility on that. But yes, we took contingency steps already, and we have very rudimentary communication through VSAT, which is very, very unpredictable. And I must say, the bandwidth is absolutely, absolutely unpredictable.
Thank you very much. Let me see if there are other questions. Isabel, you have a follow-up?
Yes. Sorry, just on the phone calls. Can you do this?
Yes, no, we don't have phone connectivity. Very briefly, for a moment, that was because we have ACCI and Etisalat as main providers, and Roshan was on for a while, and then it went down because I think some of the systems also are very connected to the fiber optic systems, which is now in today's network framing. That's the way it is. So one impacts the other. I know from our IT colleagues here who are working on this tirelessly that even the service providers are looking at other options, technical options. But that's not the answer. This has to be resumed, the normal connectivity, that the impact across the country to the average Afghans trying to get on with their lives is not disrupted in this manner.
Thank you very much. Let me see if there are other questions. I don't see other hands up in the room. No. Okay, so thank you very much. I'd like really to thank you both because I know it has been difficult. And as you said, if you had to shut all the other communication to be with us, we really appreciate Indrika and Arafat. And I'm pretty sure you'd be able to share some briefing notes. Thanks and good luck with your work. And hopefully we will manage to hear from you very soon again. Thanks. So I know there are many questions, but I guess they are all on Gaza. But we also have Tariq, who has some announcements. So I'll ask Tariq's indulgence, if it's okay. And I don't see him appearing, so I think it's okay for him. Tariq is okay, yeah? You're nodding. Okay, good. So let me go back to the questions that we had before. I'd seen Christian first, and then Jeremy.
Thank you, Jens. I'm here. Can you just confirm, I'm not sure that was very clear before, that the UN had no part in this plan and didn't know anything about it? Also the parts that Jamie pointed out, point 8, about the UN involvement. And a broader question is, does the UN have any kind of peace plan for Gaza, or are they just waiting and seeing what's happening on other fronts? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. I think you always sit there, so I know where you are. Thank you for that. No, I mean, you saw, I think we probably all saw the live feed out of the White House yesterday when the president presented this, and I did not see any UN people there. So it is not a proposal from us. So that I think that's what I can say about that. On a peace plan, well, that's not within my remit. We're humanitarians. We don't make peace plans. But I'm sure Alessandra can perhaps say something about that. But I just want to mention we do have a plan, a humanitarian plan. Of course, we do have a humanitarian appeal that is funded, and so on and so forth. So there is a plan, but on the humanitarian delivery side.
Just maybe to add to what Ian said, Christian, the peace plan, I mean, we have been witnessing the two states solution conference at the beginning of the high level week, and I would really refer you to what Ramiz Alkhbarov said yesterday to the Security Council. He briefed the Security Council. He's the Deputy Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process. There is a process which is there. It's been there for a long time. So I think we don't really... I would refer to what he said on behalf of the Secretary General and the call that we have repeated again for all the things that needs to be done immediately, which are the permanent ceasefire, immediate and unconditional release of all hostages, unfettered humanitarian access across Gaza. And of course, we welcome all the mediators' efforts towards stopping immediately the hostilities. But there is a process. There are people involved. The UN have been in this for a long time. We just need to have the political will to go ahead. I'll keep, no, I think it was Jeremy, Emma, and then I go to you, and then I go to the platform.
Kind of a follow-up to a previous question, but specifically when the plan is saying that the UN and international organizations are going to take care of the assistance and the aid, how do you understand that? Does it mean that UNRWA could be back on track? Is that what you're hoping for?
Well, our position has not changed. UNRWA is and should be certainly a part of the response. As we've said, as you remind me, it is and has been for a very long time the backbone of the aid infrastructure in Gaza and elsewhere.
Emma.
I just wanted to press you a little bit more about you being in touch with the various parties about the peace efforts. Could you just elaborate a bit more on who the UN has been speaking to, the extent to which you've been consulted, and when? And Jens, specifically on the peace board, I'm just wondering if OCHA might have a role with Tony Blair. Has Tom Fletcher been asked? Are you talking about that at all? Thank you.
Just a caveat, I'm not necessarily privy to all discussions that are going on between the very high levels of the United Nations. So there are things that I can only honestly say I simply don't know. I'm not informed. So this is one of those occasions I don't know.
Robin, pardon.
But just, Alessandra, if you could elaborate a bit more. You said you've been in touch with various parties about the peace efforts. Can you just tell us what that means? Who, when, any specifics?
No, I don't have more on that. And I think this is, as Jan said, we are not privy to all the discussions. But definitely, there is a strong, the UN has been working constantly during all this conflict, and especially the last years. We've been in touch with all the various mediation efforts by the various mediators. We've seen many efforts in that sense, not only the US, but also Qatar, Egypt, as we've seen, and we've been talking to everyone that can do something to end the suffering of the Palestinian people, get back the hostages, and let us work, as Jens said, with humanitarian support. Sorry, there was Robin, but then I'll go to the platform because there are several questions there.
Hi, Jens. I think the United Nations had 400 aid distribution points across the Gaza Strip before the war broke out. What is the condition of those distribution points now? Are they ready and able to be reactivated at short notice?
There's only about 18% of the Gaza Strip that is not under militarized zone or under evacuation order or both. So there will be distribution points which are in those areas that are not accessible for us to work in.
Satoko.
Yes, thank you very much. I just want to press the same question that actually Jeremy asked in terms of the role of UNRWA when it comes to the delivery of aid into Gaza and distribution of aid within Gaza. Does this Trump peace proposal have no restrictions for UNRWA activities? Thank you.
That's a little bit complicated for us, Satoko, to speak for UNRWA. I'd invite you to reach out to Juliet. Maybe we can get something. I'll bring your question to her just after the briefing. Ravi?
Thank you, Alessandra. Again, I come back to the same question now. We are in a catch-22 situation in which the UN has not been involved at all, despite UN's long engagement and such remarkable constructive work it had done. Are we seeing a new phase in which, the most important country in the world or the largest hegemon is willing to violate, pass by or, move away from UN to do these kind of actions, which amount to some kind of a violation in some sense because of long UN involvement in this whole rebuilding of the UNRWA's activities and so many other things. When would we get a clear picture on this?
I'm sorry, Ravi, I'm not sure I understood fully your question, but what I would say is that, as I just said, we have been involved in, we have been speaking to all the mediators. We have been involved constantly in the peace process in the Middle East. I think the conference that just preceded the general debate at the headquarters is a further confirmation of this. So I think that the UN is very much there with everything we can do, and the Secretary General has been very voiceful on all the efforts and all the support that the UN can give. John Zarokostas.
Yes, good morning. My question is to Jens. Jens, yesterday at the White House press conference, President Trump mentioned that the lead would be by the World Bank. It's not in the 20 points, but in his remarks. And he mentioned that the World Bank would be the lead. How close is OCHA working with the World Bank? And have they reached out to UN agencies to coordinate some of the reconstruction efforts, given they've been very involved with the UN and the EU in earlier assessments of the damage from the war? Thank you.
Thank you, John. I don't know.
Short and sweet. Okay, but really, I understand that, of course, we all your questions are very important. I think that it's also something that we need to look more into it. This is very recent. And as I said over and over again, we are there, we will be there, we will support as much as we can. We need maybe a little more time to also assess the implications and see how the process goes. For the moment, this is a proposal, and we are looking at this proposal. But at the same time, I like to underline that the suffering of the Gaza people continues. We need to be able to support them, and we need to be able to continue to advocate for the return of the hostages and the end of the hostilities as soon as possible. Okay, so let me go now to Tariq, who has been patiently waiting. Tariq, you have an announcement.
Hello. Hello, go ahead. Thank you very much, Alessandra. I just have a really two brief announcements. So this Thursday, we will release two reports on antibacterial agent in clinical and preclinical development, and on available and pipeline diagnostics to detect and identify priority bacteria listed in the WHO bacterial priority pathogen list. You will remember we have been talking about this bacterial priority pathogen list in the past. So the first report, WHO's analysis of antibacterial agents in clinical and preclinical development. So basically it's an overview and analysis for 2025, and it's assessing whether current research and development efforts are keeping pace with the urgent need for new treatments against the most dangerous drug-resistant bacteria. And the second report, it's entitled The Landscape Analysis of Commercially Available and Pipeline In Vitro Diagnostics for Bacterial Priority Pathogens. This second report maps existing and pipeline tools to detect and identify bacterial priority pathogens, which is essential for antimicrobial resistance control. So we don't plan a press conference on this, but our experts are ready to take interviews as needed. Also, the report can be received under embargo, so please send requests either for embargoed material or for the interview to my colleague Amna, that you know very well, or just simply at the media inquiries at WHO.int. And maybe, Alessandro, if you allow me just to remind you that we have a press conference today on another topic at 4 o'clock. You received the reminder, our strategic advisory group of experts on immunization, or SAGE, had its regular meeting and will present its conclusion. There will be different topics that will be discussed. Hopefully we will have their report also available for you. So that's today at 4 o'clock, and those two reports on antibacterial pathogens diagnostics and treatments will be on Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tariq. Any question to Tariq in the room? Don't see any online. Jamie?
Well, my question was for Jens, but he's come back off of the podium.
Okay, I'll ask him to join after. Any other question for WHO? Don't see any. So Jens, sorry, on the grill again. Jamie, go ahead, he listens.
Sorry, Jens, to bring you back up to the chair, but I do want to just make, I was going over some of the recent statements from OCHA about the state of play in Gaza, the violence and the continued military operations. Could you tell us just right now what the rough amount of aid that the UN OCHA is getting into and the partners are getting into Israel, Gaza right now? We know the GHF is still active, but it's important to understand there was obviously a lull for several months where there was nothing getting in, and it seems to have opened up a little bit. Just to give us the context, how much aid from the United Nations and partners is getting into Gaza at the moment?
Thank you, Jamie. As usual, the question is not really how much is getting in. The question is really how much are we able to pick up and distribute in Gaza. So we have been able to get some aid in. For example, community kitchens have been resupplied to some extent on Sunday. There were almost 660,000 meals prepared and delivered through 137 kitchens in Gaza. So that's an indication of aid that has come in and has been delivered. And that's where it counts when it gets into people's hands and can be consumed. There are constant, but it's a mixed bag because there are constant this back and forth toggle between whether we get permissions to go and pick it up, and then secondly, whether we get permissions once it has been picked up to go and deliver it. And we have statistics on that, and I can share that with you how many, and we're reporting it on a daily basis when in our lines that we share with you, that we try to go and get some aid to pick up, and then sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It can be either because of non-facilitation by the Israeli side, it can also be for other reasons. And as you know, a lot of the aid that has come in recently that has been picked up has been taken off the trucks by desperate people and in some cases by armed groups. So I agree, it is quite a chaotic situation. And that underlines the absolute need for a ceasefire as soon as possible so that we can restart what amounts to what I would call a proper and well-coordinated and well-supplied aid operation.
Thank you, Jens. I see Ricardo has maybe something to add on this. Ricardo, on behalf of UNICEF.
Hi, Alice. Sorry, I was trying to unmute. Hi, everyone. Yeah, just to add to what Jens was saying on the issue of humanitarian aid not getting in, as we know right now, there's massive displacement happening in Gaza from the north to the south, where to Al-Mawasi, an overcrowded area where the conditions are already very, very dire and can simply not absorb the quantity of people who are moving in. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, an estimated 400,000 displaced. And UNICEF, we do have the urgent needed tents. We have 11,000 tents waiting to get in, and over 7,000 tarpaulin sheets that are waiting to get in to help supporting these displaced populations that are going to the south, to help them set up temporary shelters. And we're not being able to get those supplies in. So it just shows how the conditions in terms of logistics and facilitation of aid continue to be very, very poor. And I wanted just to add to what Jens were saying. So beyond food, medicines, and other critical items to the well-being and survival of children and families, we also have items that would support sheltering displaced families in the south not being allowed in. And I think it's important that we get that ceasefire and then we get aid flowing in, not only to prevent the famine that continues to move to the south, but also to make sure that children and families are sheltered as we look at the winter coming and temperatures dropping, which will create a whole different range of issues, including health issues for children and their families. Thank you.
Just to give you maybe a more precise figure, between mid-August and the end of last week, an estimated almost 453,000 displacements were recorded across the Gaza Strip, with the majority originating from Gaza City. I don't see other hands up. So that leaves me with a couple of announcements, not too many today. Tariq has told you about the press conference of WHO. I have another press conference to remind you about, which is Thursday, 2nd October, at 1:30. And this is by OHCHR, the report of the independent expert on human rights situation in the Central African Republic. The report is in the press conference. Everything is under embargo until the 2nd of October at 4:30 p.m. And the speaker will be the independent expert, Yao Agbetse. Also here in Geneva, we have the Committee on Enforced Disappearances, which will close its 29th session on Friday. And they will be issuing the concluding observation of the countries that they reviewed during this session, which are Montenegro, Benin, and Sri Lanka. And then I just wanted to remind you that today in New York, there will be, during the whole day, in New York time, of course, the high-level conference on the situation of Rohingya Muslims and other minorities in Myanmar. The objective of the high-level conference is to mobilize political support, but also sustain international attention on the crisis, review the overall crisis and address its root causes, including human rights issues, and share perspectives on the situation on the ground, including challenges faced by Rohingya and other minorities in Myanmar, as well as humanitarian issues within Myanmar and the region, in order to propose a comprehensive, innovative, and concrete plan for a sustainable resolution of the crisis, including efforts to create a conducive environment for the voluntary, safe, sustainable, and dignified return of Rohingya Muslims and other members of minority group to Myanmar in a timely manner. As I said, this is going to go on for the whole morning in New York and also the afternoon in New York, so it will be a little bit late for us for the afternoon session, a whole day discussing this, and the list of the speakers is very long, so I would invite you to have a look at the webpage, and of course the conference will all be webcast, so you can see it on your screens or also catch up tomorrow. I think this was all I had for you. So if there are no further questions, I don't see any hand up or any other people who want to take the floor, no? So thank you very much. I wish you a very good day. I'll see you on Friday. Thank you.